Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Started with hanging posters on my bedroom wall. The battle rapping for status up in the schoolhouse. Just call me Double Sushi, thought I was too raw. And hip hop was my home, I had my shoes off. 6'3 in high school, skip a hoop dream. If I don't blow up, then maybe I'll try the school thing. I went to college to do my family a favor, but I couldn't pick a major cause I wanted to be major. I tried selling work, but it didn't work. So I worked, chopping, spinning cart, spinning go berserk. Lunch break, see me writing 16s over Mickey's. Skipping class, making beats over 16. And I love it even though I'm just chasing. Selfish ambition, couldn't tell your boy Nathan. Watch out all you rappers cause they finna let crazy in. But I was creeping on the sun like the days in. And you can have the money, and you can have the fame. For me, I want the glory, I'm living for the name. You like to just a picture, I see outside the frame. I'm living for a kingdom that I ain't never seen. And I'ma take that, I'ma take that. Find a key to life and let's believe that I'ma play that. Glory, I'ma take that, I'ma take that. Glory, I'ma take that, I'ma take that.
Quiet, please. Here comes the chair umpire.
And now, introducing the umpire of today's match. Hailing all the way from Burnett, Texas, and representing college coaches everywhere, the only one we could find to call the match, Jason Haynes! The show will be the best 2 out of 3 sets with tiebreakers and is called Diversity in College Tennis. So turn on your phones and get ready to call in.
And I'ma take that, I'ma take that. Find a key to life and best believe it, I'ma play that. Glory, I'ma take that, I'ma take that. Glory, I'ma take that, I'ma take that.
Good afternoon. We want to welcome you all to today's show of Diversity in College Tennis. My name is Jason Haynes. I am the host of the show, and I am approaching my 2-year anniversary of doing this show. It has been an absolute joy to bring you a different perspective on college tennis each week. The start of this show, whenever I hosted with AJ Cinieri, we weren't quite sure where it would go, and it's evolved as we've gone through this, and we really appreciate the continuing growing listenership to what we're doing. We have started to entertain a lot of college tennis fans, and we're very excited about that. We hope that every week we can give you a little different perspective, and this week is no different. On this week's show, and I am scampering around here, just so you know, I had the fortunate chance to interview Coach Pablo Montana. And Coach Montana is the coach at California University in Pennsylvania. And I know that's a mouthful, and he'll explain it when he comes on. But I just got off the phone with him probably about 15 minutes ago, and I'm scampering around here trying to figure out how I'm going to get that part of this show downloaded here while we're on air and talk college tennis and keep you entertained, and we're just going to plow through this and see what we can do. For those of you that are listening live for the first time, welcome to the UR Tennis Network. We are a network of 7 passionate people at the moment that get on the air every week. We try to travel through this tennis world, each in our own little avenue here. Mine happens to be college tennis. I was a college tennis coach for 20 years with 11 national titles, ITA College Coach of the Year twice, NJCAA Hall of Fame, All-Americans, all of that. On Wednesday, we have American Tennis with Chuck Creasy, and Chuck is a former college coach who's written many books on tennis and just an outstanding job of trying to find out about American tennis. And Thursday is the Bruce Lipka Show. Bruce is an outstanding guy. He just goes out there, he finds people, sits them down, and talks no thrills, no frills tennis. Let's just get to the heart of the matter here, and let's just see what we can do. And that's why it makes him very valuable to the network. The Tennis Authority, which airs Friday. If you haven't heard that show, please go listen to Natalie Fox. And that young lady does an outstanding job every Friday of growing a tremendous audience. She has a tremendous show, a tremendous attitude for that show, and she's just a joy to talk to all the time. She is growing, and it's amazing. Saturday, Sunday, we have two shows that come on. We have Minorities in Tennis, and that's with host Alex Chan. And Alex, what he does is you know, and Alex has been with me the longest out of all these people, but he's really evolved himself. He started with just Asian American tennis with Alex Chan, and he did his best. And then realize that there's a whole other world out there that needs to be explored. And so he opened it up, and my, oh my, do people want to hear what that guy has to say. And need to catch him on the weekend. And then we finish off our weekends with Miss Alyssa Cohan. She comes, Woman Ruling the Court. That's the name of her show. And she does. She does. No doubt about it. Monday, the day before I get on the air, is Parenting Aces with Lisa Stone. And Lisa's been doing an outstanding job of bringing the competitive junior system to light and just letting people know what's happening, giving them facts and information. She's letting people know where they can participate and what's happening. As Coach Creasy does and puts it so well, you know, we're trying to go after the issues here, and I hope you understand that. And each one of us has our own little avenue here, and we're amateurs. We're not anybody big by any means. You know, we're just people that are passionate about tennis and want to talk it, and we feel like we've got something we can add to it. So. And we're growing. We're approaching 100,000 listens. And February was our shortest month, yet it was our biggest month, or one of our biggest months. I think we were either a couple hundred shy or over being the big month. And 28 days, and that's just a pat on the back to the hosts and what they're doing out there, and that they continue to grow this network. And we're so excited that you are passing the word along to other people that the UR Tennis Network is out there and that they're putting forth some good content. Thank you for that. And we look for March to be even better. I mean, my gosh, in the pro tennis world, you know, Rafael Nadal is back. We got the top four guys, the women. We've got a rivalry there. We have the World Tennis Night last night. I mean, there's just stuff always going on that we're going to try to cover for you here and bring to light. So welcome aboard, and we're so excited that you have chosen us as an information source. And we love the fact that we're podcasted on iTunes, and you can also go to Blog Talk Radio and get our shows there. That really helps the podcast because people can take that with them wherever they want to go. If they want to listen to us while they're working out, great. If they're out on a 5-mile run, do it. If they're, you know, wherever, sitting around waiting for a tennis tournament to get started, listen to us. And we'll give you some good information. Now, speaking of good information, you know, the college tennis world is busy. We're in the spring season here. A lot of coaches are approaching spring break. Spring break, typical coach attitude, either yes, we are going to take a spring break and we are going to play a lot. We're going to a great location, great weather. Or you kids go enjoy your week. I'm going to go recharge and get ready to come back, you know. And it's either one works. That's what I found. It doesn't seem to matter. The kids, if you go down and you compete, they get a lot out of it. They get to spend a lot of time with each other, and then they get to spend a lot of time with their coach. The coach gets to know them, and I think it's a great way. And then if you don't, you get a little break from everybody. And there's nothing wrong with that either. So my favorite time, though, always was after spring break. That was the time that we got serious about competing for a national title. And we knew we had about 6 to 8 weeks to go. We knew that we could put it together. We had a little bit of fine-tuning to do. And we were getting ready to go. So that was my favorite time of the year. We traveled to Tucson, Arizona. And we would strap on the boots, and we would get into battle, and we would see what would happen in our system, and have a lot of fun as a team while we were out there. And then, lo and behold, sometimes we came back with a nice trophy that said we did something well. And then I got back on the phone recruiting for the next year. So that's about college tennis. That's what's left of it as we travel through this. Now, the ITA is busy again. You know, and last week we had the what we were able to do was report on the Division III Men's National Championship, and this last weekend the Women Division III. Now, keep in mind that these are the really smart kids out there. These are the kids that didn't need athletic help. They went straight for academics. And Johns Hopkins claims the 2013 ITA Division III National Women's Teens Indoor Championship crown. I bet those are some smart young ladies. And I sure hope they're going into the medical field to be that smart, that competitive, to do this sport. There's a lot of value in there. It was a dramatic final. It was hosted by DePaul University in Greencastle, Indiana. Not probably one of your great tourist hot spots, but a great spot for some NCAA tennis. They were seeded fifth, these Johns Hopkins Blue Jays. They defeated the number 2 seed, Carnegie Mellon, 5-4 to take home the trophy. You see how much drama is involved there in that score, 5-4. You know that there was something that went on there. We had to get to 4-4, so we had a 5-4. The whole weekend, they defeated DePaul, host of the tournament, 6-3, and number 1 seed Chicago, 6-3 as well. How about that? They whipped, came in there, Johns Hopkins ladies, the Blue Jays, we're going to whip some tail. Let's go do this. Johns Hopkins coach David Woodring noted that Carnegie Mellon came out strong in the doubles. It went down to the wire. We play them at least twice a year. The match always seems to be exciting. Nice to come through today. And, you know, that's what the Carnegie Mellon girls went home with. They got it today. I want to thank the ITA and DePaul for hosting the great weekend. See, that's a good coach. You know, he sees what happened. He knows what went on. There's a lot of things that went on for that tournament. It's nice to walk away with that trophy, but he knows a lot of event planning went into that. Thank the right people. Carnegie Mellon started off the match as it had all weekend, producing solid doubles play early. At the number two spot, the Tartan tandem of Chelsea Modi and Bryn Raschke, 1-8-2, against Abby Clark and Shannon Herndon. Modi and Raschke wrapped up the weekend 3-0 in doubles play, not dropping more than three games to one opponent. The Blue Jays countered with a victory in court three, winning 8-3. With the score tied, Carnegie Mellon, the duo of Cecil and Pratt, came through with an 8-5 triumph. They claimed the lead for good after going up a break 4-3. Several games went to deuce the rest of the way, but the Tartans were able to close it out for the 2-1 lead. So the Blue Jays are already behind to the Tartans. I'm not sure what a Tartan is, and I hope somebody will let me know sometime. Carnegie Mellon also jumped out to leads on the singles matches when they split them, got them underway. They led courts 1 and 3, and they looked to complete control of the match. Number two position, Modi, just too good. She won 6-1, 6-0. Johns Hopkins received a quick point of their own. Kirstie Herndon at the third spot. She won 6-1, 6-0. And they thought the Tartans were going to get another straight match win on a court one from Cecil. She won the opening set 6-2. She fell behind to 0-2, and then that started off three consecutive breaks before Hogan held 4-1. Cecil would rally to get to 5-4, but a beautifully executed backhand drop shot on set point. On set point. And that's guts. Gave Hogan the second set. Cecil got a little frustrated with that. She got a little more determined. She ended up winning the third set, score 6-3. And then the Blue Jays just started the comeback. Lehman, she came through a clutch at the number four spot for Hopkins, and she defeated Pratt. 6-3, 6-2, with the momentum clearly swinging to the Blue Jays' side. At that point, the players at spots 5 and 6 for Hopkins produced winning tennis. Clark toughed out a close first set on court 5 with Sue, winning the open set 6-4 on a Sue double fault. Ah! A little bit of pressure. The second set remained tied until Clark broke at 4-2, winning the last four games 6-4, 6-2. Then everyone got to the highly anticipated number six spot. And I was watching UT and Rice, the women, play this weekend. And let me tell you, it was exciting to get back out there and watch high-level tennis. Rice ended up upsetting this team on a great volley. I commented to Coach Elizabeth Rice. I saw the volley. It was just one of those weird deals. A girl squatted down, struck a racket out, and the ball hit it, and it shanked off to the side of the court. Forced Texas to really play a little bit of defense at the wrong time, and Rice stepped up and knocked the ball between the duo, clinching the number one spot, and wow, it was exciting. And then to get to see the Longhorn Network cover those courts, also very exciting, and college tennis is fun to watch. Not a lot of people in the stands, though, and it was a cold, windy day, I get that, but that match was fun. So here we go, down to number six. I think on that day, too, that they spent a lot of time watching six singles at Rice and UT, too. Now, the Blue Jays took Redig took the first set 6-2 against Hamstra. Now, the players seemed to stay content behind the baseline, I bet. Worked the point, rallying cross-court for numerous shots. Redig was able to come out on top of the majority of the extended rallies, taking 3-0 lead in the second. Went to 5-2. Hamstra held to close within 5-3. after a couple of shaky points, though, Reddick served out the championship for her team. Big day for Miss Reddick, you know, to get to capture that trophy for her team. That says a lot, and there's a lot of things that went on that day, and only one person gets to look like they're the hero of that day, Miss Reddick, the number six singles player. The other thing that came out recently was the ITA rankings. The Virginia Cavaliers and North Carolina Tar Heels enjoyed another week atop. Now, these are computer-generated rankings. For Virginia, it's the seventh week in a row on the men's, and North Carolina have owned the top spot for 4 weeks now. Following the men in order, UCLA, USC, Duke, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Georgia, Ohio State, Ole Miss, and Tennessee. On the women's side, North Carolina is followed by Duke, UCLA, Texas A&M, Florida, Alabama, Northwestern, Michigan, Georgia, Nebraska. Wow. Conference count. Men's top 25. SEC has 7 of the 16 teams represented. ACC and Pac-12 with 4. Big 10, 3. Big 12 and Ivy League, 2. Conference USA, Missouri Valley, and WCC with 1. 5 different conferences have at least one team inside the top 10. With the SEC leading the way for another consecutive week with 4 teams. The SEC on the women's side also leads with 6 teams represented inside the top 25. The ACC closely behind with 5. Big 10 and Pac-12 with 4. Conference USA and Big 12 with 2. Big East and Big West with 1. 4 women's conferences make up the top 10. And like the men, the SEC has the most teams in the top 10 with 4 wins. Or 4 teams, sorry. Whew. A lot of teams there, isn't it? So, the interesting part about this is the double dip. A total of 10 schools have both men's and women's programs ranked inside the top 25. Duke and Georgia and UCLA find both their men's and women's teams inside the top 10. Pretty good. A total of 3 new teams made their way into the top 25 this week, including the Drake men and the UCI Irvine women, a pair of teams who have not been there all season. The Bulldogs of Drake jumped 11 spots to 16 after upsetting former number 14 Washington, while UC Irvine moved 6 spots to number 24 after getting 7 consecutive win matches with a 4-3 win over former 39 Long Beach State. Newcomers, 15 new teams, 8 men, 8 women, 7 men, cracked the top 75 this week. Of the 15 teams, 6 are making their 2013 debut. On the men's side, Texas A&M Corpus Christi is the top one there at number 15. 51, South Alabama, UNLV, Penn State, St. Mary's, and New Mexico all are newcomers. On the women's side, Denver, Elon, Wyoming, Appalachian State, Fresno State, Loyola Marymount, and Utah. All newcomers. Congratulations. The next team results here, March 12th, next Tuesday. Then April 9th, the singles and doubles rankings will be posted each week. So we'll be sure that we get that updated and bring you as much ranking information as we can. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to play the interview that I recorded earlier with Coach Pablo Montana, the women's tennis coach out of California University of Pennsylvania, nationally ranked, nationally recognized. It was fun to do, so hang on just a second. Let me play this commercial, and then we'll get going. Sorry. That was for Coach Creasy. Let's try this again. You know, help if the chief executive officer would get this right. Sorry. Here we go.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Well, here he is, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm sorry we don't have any reason to call in today or email or anything like that. You'll just have to listen, and I thoroughly appreciate him coming on. And I'll finish out the rest of the show here, and I'll see you here next Tuesday. When this all gets said and done, just so you know, next Tuesday when I come back, I will be live on the air. We're going to talk to Chris Bizot. Chris is going to be on spring break, and I believe he's in California. He's a UT Tyler coach, Division III program, so look forward to visiting with him. So enjoy the interview, and we'll see you back.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. We want to welcome you back to the show. We've got Pablo Montana on the air today. He is a busy man. He is the head coach out at, and Coach Bob Montana. If I screw this up, you help me out. California University in Pennsylvania. Is that right, Coach?
That is correct. Yep.
You know, that's always a mouthful. When I was at Lee, I always wondered how that worked. California University at Pennsylvania, can you kind of give us a little history there?
Yeah, the actual the city is actually called California. We're inside Pennsylvania, obviously. We're about 30 minutes southwest of Pittsburgh. But the university itself was founded in 1856. It was California State College. But the rumor has it is that the city of California was founded and discovered before the state of California out west was discovered. So I think the people out west, I think they stole our name.
I see. Ever any battles with the copyright infringement over that name there, Coach?
It's funny, isn't it? I mean, there's another school in our conference actually called Indiana University of Pennsylvania. And another thing that's pretty funny is that our last name is Montana, and we live in a city here in Washington in the state of Pennsylvania, and I travel to California every day. So go figure.
Wow. That is something else. Oh, you know, I knew there had to be something behind that, and I never really got the whole story, Coach. Now, you compete in the Division II level. How many kids at the university there?
We have 11,000 students, and I think we have another additional 2,000 grad students, so about 13,000 total.
So is there on-campus housing, Coach?
On-campus outing, I'm sorry?
Is there on-campus housing?
Oh, of course, absolutely, yeah. Our dorms actually are state-of-the-art. It's probably one of our nicest facilities. Our president invested over $100 million about 5 or 6 years ago, and you know, they're definitely one of our nicest features. They try to promote it like it's the suite house living. They try to make it like a nice, very, very nice hotel room, but that's definitely one of our nicer features on campus.
So, Coach, if a kid's going to come to school there at California, what's the major? What are they coming for?
Well, we offer over 200 degree programs, but our university and the 14 other state schools in our system, we specialize in education, elementary education, secondary education. But again, we offer over 200 degree programs. We're always mentioned in the Princeton Review Guide for being one of the top comprehensive universities in the Northeast region. So I'd like to think we have a nice selection.
Yeah, and are a lot of these kids from the California area, or do you get them from, you know, from all over Pennsylvania? What's your, how's your student body made up there, Coach?
No, it's mostly, I would say mostly, you know, probably mostly Pennsylvanians. I don't have the exact number in front of me. I'd probably say 65-70% Pennsylvania kids, and you know, probably the rest, you know, from like the bordering states. And And, of course, we have some internationals, and, of course, we have some, you know, from long distances as well. But, yeah, I would say that most of them are from the Pennsylvania area.
So California itself, how big is the city of California?
Yeah, it's about probably about 5,000, you know, probably about 5,000 people. It's a great little college town, you know, because it's a small little college town, but you have all your basic needs, obviously. But you know, it's really nice because you have the residents and a lot of the locals get behind our sports teams, and they're very involved. And again, you know, it's not that far from Pittsburgh. We're only about 35 minutes from Pittsburgh. So, you know, there's a nice little there's a nice major city if you ever need to get out of California for a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt. So that university is really important to that local population, right, Coach?
It really is. It really is. And they really stand behind you know, our policy and our student athletes, our faculty. It's really nice to see.
Yeah. So your sports there. How many sports total at the school?
We have 16 varsity sports, and we all compete at the Division II level. Our conference is called the PSAC, the Pennsylvania State Athletic Conference, and there are 14 schools within our conference and in the state system of higher education in Pennsylvania. And, yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, the farthest we have to travel probably is about 4 hours out east, you know, towards Philadelphia, you know, where on the other side of the state, on the west, you know, towards Pittsburgh. But then we have a little bit to go up north towards Erie. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, and you're very successful at what you do, Coach.
Well, I appreciate that.
Year,
thank you.
You know, every year, I was at Lee, Division II. You were a force to be reckoned with when we got out there that small college championship.
Yeah, we've been pretty lucky. We've been pretty lucky the last few years, and we've gotten you know, to the point in tennis where a lot of the student athletes are contacting us now, and you know as well as I do, Lee, it's all, you know, it's all word of mouth. If your student athletes have a good experience, they usually become your best recruiters, and I've been very fortunate with that.
All right. Now, Coach, tell us a little bit about your facilities. Do you operate on campus? Do you have to go off campus? How does that work for you?
We have a beautiful six outdoor lighted facility on campus. They recently built it in 2008. They built a new one for us. I think our university invested about $1.4 million in them. And we play all of our home matches, obviously, on campus from January until late February. We're practicing indoors. We have a beautiful six indoor tennis facility that we have to travel to. It's in South Park, Pennsylvania, about 20 minutes from campus, and we play a few of our home matches there as well. So we're very lucky to have this contract. It's called Glen Creek Racquet Club, and they take very good care of us, and we get to practice there, and we play our matches there when the weather does not cooperate sometimes.
Yeah, and Coach, your fall schedule, are you an interdivisional player? How does that work for you for your fall? Can you give us what you do?
Yeah, for sure. Well, if you take a look at our schedule anyway on calvulcans.com, you'll see that we play a very, very tough schedule. We play a lot of Division I schools. We play a couple of Division III schools. Of course, we play our Division II schedule within our conference, and then we travel down to Florida for spring break. But in the fall, we mostly play tournaments. In Division I and Division II, the NCAA allows each institution to play 25 dates. So typically in the fall, we play about four or five tournaments. And, you know, it just depends. We'll go to Michigan State, play a tournament there. Sometimes we'll go to Penn State, we'll play a tournament there. We'll have to play a Division II regional tournament in West Virginia. We've been fortunate the last few years to go down to Alabama for our national college small championships. So our fall is a good time for the individual season, and that's pretty much true with all the other tennis schools as well. The fall season usually is a time to focus on your individual tournaments, your individual rankings. And then in the spring, we play our team matches, which our NCAA tournament, as you know, Lee, is in May. And we also play just a very tough schedule starting in February. So,
Coach, I used to love that small college event. How about you?
It's a great little event. They do a great job. The ITA, the Intercollegiate Tennis Association, does an outstanding job running that event. And it's pretty unique. It's the only event in the country, as far as I know, where it brings the best Division II players, the best Division III players, the best NAIA players, the best junior college players, and they all compete for a national championship. It's pretty cool. And then at the end, as you know, Lee, they have a Super Bowl champion where they get the best Division II, Division III, NAIA, and junior college player, and they start in the Final Four, and they determine the Super Bowl champion there. And then that winner gets a wild card into the Division I Indoor National Championships in November. So it's pretty unique. I don't know of any other sport that does that.
No, I don't either, Coach. And I wish the ITA would pursue more opportunities like that, because I think even in the spring at the team level, that creates an interesting environment itself. And that promotes the sport. It's good. I love the interdivisional play. And we would do well in the community college, junior college division. I didn't really make it that far. I can't remember. I don't think I ever made it to a final of a small college event. What's your best result there, Coach?
Yeah, our best result, too. We came in third place a few years ago. We lost in the semis of singles. And then for third and fourth place, one of my players beat the number one player in the country from BYU Hawaii. But it's tough, Lee. I mean, it's tough. I mean, you know, you start in the final eight, in the elite eight in each bracket, and, you know, you're playing against the best players in the country. So it's a pretty unique, it's a pretty special event. But, you know, just making it down there is obviously a huge accomplishment for us.
Coach, you know, when I was there at Lee, looking on the outside of that tournament, we always hoped that we didn't draw BYU Hawaii on the semifinal day. You know, and many people don't realize that the BYU Hawaii doesn't play on Sunday. They'll stop. I've seen it to the point to where they'll be up 6-0, 5-0, you know, 40-15 and withdraw from the match because they want somebody to compete in that final. It's an honorable thing, Coach. But we always wanted to have BYU in the opposite half of the draw. They're a tough team.
No, I agree. And I think it's just like you said, that's a very honorable thing. What they do, I give kudos to their coach there, Dave Porter, because it also happened again this year too, Lee. On the single side, Armstrong Atlantic and BYU were scheduled to play in the finals, and I think it's just like you said, BYU had the match points, but they ended up shaking hands because they couldn't play the final event on Sunday, and I think that's definitely very honorable, just like you mentioned. So, yeah, they're still an elite program. BYU Hawaii, Armstrong Atlantic, they're still the top teams in Division II.
Yeah, and some great programs as you go through it. Now, Coach, in the spring, do you get a chance to play? Did the Division I's extend their hand out to you? Do they play in the spring?
You know what? It's actually nice to see. It took me a while to actually get there, but, yes, now – after being here 11 years, I've established some rapport here with the local Division I schools in our area, like the University of Pittsburgh, Duquesne. We'll play West Virginia. So far this year, we played a few schools in the MAC. We've played Bowling Green. We've played Miami of Ohio. We've played Toledo. we just beat the University of Pittsburgh on Sunday, which was a good match. And then we play West Virginia again this Friday. And then on Monday, I think that's the 10th or the 11th, we go down to Philadelphia and play Temple. And then, let's see, on the 15th, we'll travel down to Florida for a spring break trip. Our first match will be against Rutgers. So we, if you look at our schedule, I don't have it in front of me right now, but we probably average anywhere from, like, 7 to 10 Division I matches per year. Yeah, it was always tough trying to get them on schedule. You know, their philosophy, a lot of the times, I'm sure, is, you know, they have nothing to gain and everything to lose. But, you know, I think, you know, as you're in this business enough, Lee, you know, you start getting a reputation and whatnot, and, you know, you just realize at the end of the day, it's just a good college competitive match. You know, it really doesn't matter who wins or loses. But, you know, all your players are going to get taxed. It's going to be a great match experience, and I've been very fortunate that these schools are, you know, that are playing us.
Yeah. And the spring break, do you usually take a spring break? How does that work for you?
We start our spring break trip on March 15th, and it's a great opportunity for us. We travel down south to Florida most of the times. I think we've done this now for about 4 or 5 years straight now. And in Florida, you have a lot of the top 10 Division II schools that we get a chance to compete with that we normally wouldn't see until the national tournament in May. So On our break starting next week, we'll play Lynn University. I think they're ranked number 6 or 7 right now in the country. We'll play Barry University, who's ranked number 3 in the country. We'll play Rollins College, who's about 15. We'll play Nova Southeastern, who's 21. Currently, we're ranked number 9 in the country. So it's a lot of good tennis, you know, and it you know, it definitely keeps us on the edge, you know, when we're down there. So there's no pancake matches. There's no you know, there's no easy warm-ups. We go down there and we're ready to play.
Yeah, Coach, this gears you up for, I suppose, a conference tournament. Is that the way it's decided, or how does that work in your area?
Yeah, our conference tournament is usually that third week in April, and we don't begin playing our conference schedule until late March. So this spring break trip, obviously, is just great for us. It really gets us grooved for our conference play in late March. And, you know, the thing you always get a little worried about are injuries during this time of year. Because you're playing such a tough schedule, you know, the players are constantly getting taxed on their bodies, you know. And it's so physical when you're having to chase down every single ball against these great players. But, you know, if you want to be the best, you got to play with the best. And I think, you know, this is a good wake-up call to see where we are as far as our conditioning, as far as our consistency, as far as our power. So it's definitely a good test for us to see where we really are.
Yeah. If you win the conference tournament, Coach, do you get to go to the NCAA dance? How does that work?
Yeah. In Division II, much like Division I, you know, the Division II tennis championships is much like the Division I basketball championships. It's a bracket of 64. They take the 64 teams in the country, and they take conference winners, get automatic bids into the tournament. And in addition to that, they take, you know, the top 8 teams from each region. So there's 8 regions across the country. Usually the top 8 teams qualify unless you're a conference winner because you get the automatic bid. But yeah, we've made the conference tournament now, I think, the last 9 out of 10 years. I'm sorry, we've made the NCAA tournament the last 9 out of 10 years.
Wow, that's a good correction, Coach.
Yeah, thanks.
You know, that's successful, you know. That's what I get out of what you're trying to do there is that, and I've had this conversation with several of the coaches, you know, when you have the ability to drive those kids towards a championship, towards winning. That's a big part of developing a program, right?
I think so. You know, and the players, I think the players want to play a good schedule, you know, and that's one thing that I take pride in. We play a tough schedule. You know, we really do play a tough schedule. I sell that when I recruit my players. I sell that when I'm talking to their parents. You know, we don't you know, we don't have a like an end of year record where we're 25-0 or we're 23-2. You know, usually our records are like 13-12. You know, we're 14-11 because we get beat. I mean, you know, I'm just a big believer that if you, you know, if you want to get better, you got to see a faster ball come at you. And, you know, it just prepares you so much for the end of the year. You know, for April and May, when you're playing these tough schools in February and March, it just really helps you, I think, prepare, you know, for April and May, how to play the big points, how to, you know, how to handle the pressure, how to prevent the choking, because you've been there, you know, and you play the tough matches already. If you're constantly playing easy matches, you're not being challenged. You know, you're not finding yourselves in like a lot of those pressure-like situations. So it's important. I think you got to play a tough schedule, and you know, that's one thing that I think that we're definitely doing right here.
Yeah, I agree, Coach, and it's reflected in the success of what you're doing there. You know, I got to get. I'm a little curious here on a personal note here. I mean, Coach, and I do this. It's kind of a short answer question as we go through this. Who started you with tennis at what age did you get started?
No, it's good. I come from a tennis family, Lee. I'm born and raised in Miami, Florida. Obviously, we have good weather down there, and I come from a tennis family. My dad was a tennis coach. My brother, who's 5 years older than me, was also played at a very high level. I had a tennis court in my backyard growing up, so I probably had a racket in my hands, you know, probably like 4 or 5, but I really didn't start getting into it probably till I was like 9, 10, 11. And then probably when I was about 16 is when I started to get good as an American junior. And it was a lot easier for me, I think, than what a lot of other people have to do. Because, you know, as you know, tennis can be pretty expensive sometimes, and you got to travel, and you got to pay for your coach, you got to pay for your court time and whatnot. I was very fortunate that my dad was a coach, and he had his tennis clubs, and so it was pretty much always with me when I was born, basically.
Hey, Coach, I used to have the motto "Half team will travel" when I was there at Lee, and it sounds like you could have put a sign in your front yard that said "Half court will play."
Yeah, it's funny. That's funny. Yeah, no, I mean we lived in brief tennis, and you know what? I'm just so thankful right now for my father for all that he's done, and all the sacrifice that he's done for me. Because I have two kids of my own right now, ages 6 and 9, and I'm trying to get them to play tennis, and it's tough. It is definitely tough. You definitely got to put in the time. You got to have the patience, and it is definitely tough. So I definitely appreciate my dad and my mom, you know, just for all their patience and endurance throughout my childhood.
Yeah, well, Coach, you know, it burns the question, which of the Montanas is the best?
Well, it's not me. I don't mind saying that. It's not me. My brother played at a much higher level than I did. I played college tennis at the University of Tennessee, which was good. My brother played at the University of Georgia, and, you know, they were always an elite program, Division I. You know, they were always top five in the country. Professionally, my brother got to be as high as 4 in the world on the doubles side. He won major events like Monte Carlo, and he won the Canadian Open. I think his best Grand Slam result maybe might have been the quarters of Wimbledon or quarters of the French. I'm sure you can check that out. His name was Francisco Montana. So he definitely had a much better career than I did. My highest ranking on the ATP Tour was 368 on the doubles side, which, you know, obviously sounds good. I know it sounds good, but you're not really making a living on the circuit until like your top 150 or 200 in the world. And I just felt I wasn't quite there yet, and I wanted to start making some real money. So,
yeah, that's outstanding, Coach. Now, you know, with that tennis philosophy, I mean, as you go through your life, is there something early on that just really stuck with you that you've kept through your years?
Consistency is the ultimate weapon, and that's you know, that's basically what my dad ingrained in me. It sounds so simple, I know. It sounds so simple, but I just think that's true in all areas of life. You know, it's not just tennis, and tennis is easy because it's you know, basically the person that keeps one more ball back in play is usually going to win that match. You know, and I just think, you know, that philosophy, consistency being the ultimate weapon, you know, it just helped me to stay the course, to be patient, good things are going to happen.
Hey, Coach, no matter what level, that little rule there that you put out just seems so true. If you just get one more ball back, and you end up winning a lot of those matches. It's you know, very valuable.
It really is.
I joke sometimes with people on the outside that are just beginning to understand tennis and talk to them about what they see and what you know, and they'll say, well, gosh, if my kid would just get the ball back one more time, we would get in a lot more of these points, you know, and it's just like, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist here to figure this game out, you know.
No, I agree. I mean, it's, you know, as you get better and better, you know, and I'm trying to deal with this with my kids right now, you know, who are 6 and 9, and they've just started playing the last 3 or 4 months. You know, it's definitely becomes more gratifying when you can start getting balls and play, and you can have long rallies and whatnot. But it's a game of just a lot of repetitions, you know. I guess like any other sport, you know, there's no substitution for the ball repetition. But, you know, I think with tennis, you know, I don't think it really matters, you know, what kind of technique you have, what kind of stroke you have, but if you can be, you know, fit, you know, like if you can be willing to just stay out there for 2 or 3 hours, and if you can get the ball in play, you're gonna do pretty good in tennis, you know. And that's you know, that's something that that I try to coach my players here, you know, even at this level too. You know, we just gotta find a way to get one more ball back in play, you know, and that's why all the other things are so important. Your mental toughness, your physical conditioning, your footwork, you know, all those things come to play so that you're able to try and keep one more ball back in play.
Coach, what is it you really love about coaching tennis?
Oh, that's just great. I just love the competitive mindset of it, especially in college tennis. And it's, you know, even at the country club level as well, you know, if, you know, even if it's not as competitive, I like to see, you know, people improving, you know, like I like to see a person starting at A and then finally getting to Z, you know, if he or she sticks with it and they have the goal to do it. I enjoy seeing that. And, it's just, it's just a very unique sport, I think, you know, it's, at the college level, you know, it's a team sport, obviously, but you're still playing every match is on your court, you know, so you're still responsible for what you do in your court. And it's just a fun, competitive atmosphere. You get to be with, you know, college kids, so they get to keep you young, obviously. And I like to travel. I love the practice. I like the recruiting. I'm very lucky to be in this field.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Coach. You know, you're one of the few that gets to do what they love to do and help out a great group of people as you do it.
I agree.
As you go through the years with your teams, have you yourself kind of developed a personal motto or something you carry with you?
I don't mean to sound redundant here, but, just trying to be consistent, you know, not just with my philosophies or whatnot, but, you know, just to be consistent with, you know, what we're trying to accomplish here, you know, what are our goals, you know. I just think tennis is such a small part of the overall picture when you're a college coach. I mean, you have them for 4 years, you know, like you have these kids for 4 years, it's not a lot of time. You know, I think the important thing is when you get these kids, you try to develop them into better persons. You know, we try and do some community work here at CalU. You know, we try to engage with, you know, some of our fans, you know, and, you know, we don't have a lot of fans, but, you know, like we try to get personal with them and our faculty and whatnot. You know, there's so many life lessons, Lee, as you know. I mean, every day at practice, there's always a life lesson to be taught, you know, whether it's trying your best or having the right attitude or whatever, you know, and there's always so many great things to be taught, you know, and I just really enjoy that, you know, just always trying to do the right thing, you know, and just trying to make an impact.
Yeah. Now, Coach, I have to play a commercial there right quick. When I come back, we'll finish that interview and get into the meat of this, okay? Hang on just
Sounds good.
This is Jason Haynes,
CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At USSportCamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit USSportCamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike tennis camps and take your game to the next level.
Well, Coach, one of the questions I haven't asked yet, and I'm curious here, do you have an all-time great tennis player accomplishment?
An all-time great tennis player accomplishment. I think as a player, I think 1996, something I'll never forget is me and my doubles partner at the University of Tennessee, we won the National Indoor Championships. It was Division I that put us number one in the country in doubles. But it was pretty cool because we had about a 15-second clip on ESPN. ESPN was there, and they showed some highlights of it, and that was pretty special for me.
Yeah, that's a big deal, Coach. In that moment, I try to get inside just the player a little bit. I mean, is that the one where you went, you know what, I'm a pretty good player?
Yeah, I think, I had a feeling I knew I was pretty good, but to win, like a national championship, that pretty much puts you at the best, and that's what's pretty cool about tennis too, is that it really only takes 1 week, even at the professional level, it takes 1 week to really make it, and if you can have 1 week, just to get lucky, like a lot of things got to go right, a lot of the stars have to be lined perfectly or whatnot, and if you can have one good week, it's amazing what kind of confidence really can generate from that. And it was only about a 4-day tournament, maybe a 3-day tournament, I don't remember, but everything just went well, like we had no business even being in the tournament. I think me and my partner, we were a regional finalist. We lost in the finals of our regional qualifier to get there, and it just happens to be that a spot came open. We were the first alternates, and we got in there by luck, So it's a crazy sport, tennis, you do everything you can to prepare, and then when an opportunity comes knocking on the door, you better be ready.
That's right. You're definitely right, Coach. Is there a tournament on TV that you and your family really sit down and watch? And I think about the Super Bowl, or we're getting through with All-Star Weekend, those kind of things where it's a special sporting event. Anything like that in the Montana household?
I think you gotta love the U.S. Open. I mean, that's American tennis at its best. At the end of August, it's a quiet time. The kids at the university are just getting back, so it's still some downtime. You're trying to ease into it and everything. So that's I really look forward to the U.S. Open. I, out of all the other majors, I just feel like I can relax, I can watch it. There's no pressure. That's something that we definitely look forward to watching.
Coach, who's your all-time favorite tennis player?
Oof, gosh, man, that's a tough one. I grew up with the, like the Jimmy Connors and the John McEnroes. I'm 38 years old, but it's just hard not to, it's hard not to say Andre Agassi and just all he did for tennis and his fashion and his style and his personality. I think you gotta love Agassi, just for all he did and all he continues to do, just with his charity work and all the good things he's doing to try to promote tennis. I think he's got to be up there.
Coach, did you have the mullet and the denim shorts?
Yeah, I did. I sure did, man. I was probably about 14 or 15. Probably Agassi was about like 25. He's like 5 years older than me. But, yeah, I thought I was cool. I thought I was cool wearing the Nike denims. And I look back on it now, and now I can see that I probably wasn't very cool. But at the time, I definitely thought it was.
Yeah, it's those special moments as a kid where you emulate those players to that point, where I'm going to wear the shorts, I'm going to get the haircut, and I'm going to play like that guy, and I'm going to be better than him in the long run. Those were all these fun times.
Those are great stuff. Those are, and he was a, I thought he was a great role model and whatnot, and you know, even now, you know, with, you know, his book, his confessions or whatnot, I think that takes a lot of courage, you know, to admit all those things. But yeah, he was a good role model. He definitely inspired me, you know, to, you know, just to try and be the best.
Yeah. Coach, let's just hypothetically say there's a world championships of doubles. They give you a call. You can choose anybody on the planet, a professional, amateur, college player, or a partner. Who's it going to be?
It's got to be Bob Bryan. Yeah, it's got to be Bob or Mike Bryan. Those guys are just they're just so dominant right now, man. It's awesome to see what they're doing with tennis, too. You know, and even though they don't have the same kind of a celebrity status as the top singles players, man, what they've accomplished has just been phenomenal. You know, I mean, they're just, you know, just winning tournament after tournament. And they're, you know, they're not that young anymore, I don't think, you know. And they're, you know, they continue just to, you know, do it on a consistent basis. So, yeah, they definitely have to go down as one of the best, if not the best, ever to play.
Oh, I agree. I agree. And now, last question here, Coach. All-time favorite tennis racket.
Oh, wow, man. All-time favorite tennis racket. No, that's not a hard one. I'm going to have to say the Prince Graphite, the old Prince Graphite oversized 110. Also also played by Andre Agassi. Many great tennis players to play with that, as you know, Lee. That's a classic, man. That's a classic racket. I started out playing with the Wilson Jack Kramer, which was a great wooden racket. But, I just think the old Prince Graphite 110 oversized, that was a... That's a tough racket to beat.
Most popular racket on this show, Coach. I tell you, everybody loved that stick.
Isn't that funny? It's crazy, huh?
Yeah, it really is. All right, Coach, let's talk a little bit here about this college tennis thing. And you obviously, and I, as we go through this, you know, I had a different opinion because of my community college experience. You have a different opinion, the D2 experience, but... let's talk about this American versus international perspective. Coach, there are some people out there that say there are too many internationals in American tennis. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's a, you know, it's an international sport, Lee. You know, it's like soccer or, you know, any other sport where you have it all over the world. You know, it's tough. I mean, I can understand both arguments. You know, I can understand that you know, there's some people that are upset that these international players are taking maybe some scholarships, you know, from the American players. You know, but you know, I think a lot of the times too, you'll see that there's just a lot more international players that are coming out in the ranks. You know, and I'd like to see American tennis to continue to grow. I think we're getting back on the right tracks here with our junior development and you know, just our American philosophies, but there's just a lot of really good international, you know, players out there.
Yeah, and they're valuable, you know. I mean, that's what we got at our level, that these kids brought in a higher level of tennis.
I mean, it's tough. I mean, you know, I've had many Americans to play in my team, and, you know, it's a little different from where I'm at, you know, at California University of Pennsylvania. I'm going to have a more difficult time getting the top American player when, you know, she's looking at Penn State or Ohio State or even like the University of Pittsburgh that's in our region. So it's a little easier for me, you know, to get a better international player, you know, who aren't as informed maybe, you know, as they go through the process or whatnot. But, I mean, you know, the truth is there's just a lot of good international tennis players out there. Again, I think the American system is getting better. You know, it's encouraging to see some of the American men and women on the pro tour that are coming up in the ranks. So, you know, I think that has to be something positive. But, you know, still when you look at the professional ranks and even the top college programs, you'll see that the majority of them are, you know, pretty much international.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not a bad thing. I want to, you know, you and I get this being small college people. These kids enhance the university life, they enhance the team, and they're valuable. I just don't like to see it. I don't like to see it 8 to 10 deep on a college team. How about you, Coach?
8 to 10 deep, meaning, you know, eight internationals, two Americans?
Right. No, eight internationals, period.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough, Lee. Again, you know, it just depends. You know, it just depends what kind of, you know, direction you're trying to go in. You know, I mean, if you're trying to be competitive and you're trying to win, you know, like, I don't mind using me for example here. I mean, I really do try to get the top Americans, you know, to come to my program. But again, it's a little tougher sell, you know, when I'm competing with a lot of these major Division I, you know, programs that are in our area. You know, Pittsburgh, Duquesne, Penn State, you know, who's obviously a top 25 program. Ohio State's a top 20 program. I think the answer is a good balance. You know, like, I think you can try to get three or four international, three or four Americans. You know, I think there has to be some kind of balance with it. I agree with that.
Yeah, Coach Dale, I was always under the impression that I could offer a good American a great college experience. Same situation for you. If you did happen to get one of those good American players, would they have a great college tennis experience there?
I agree. I absolutely agree. You know, and that's where the whole recruiting and the whole selling comes into play. You know, like, I try to sell myself as a coach. I try to sell myself as a background, my experience, you know, what I've done as a player, what I've done as a coach now. You know, I think our university itself is a very good product. You know, it's a very good product. It's not, you know, it may not have the same kind of a national recognition as a Penn State, again, or an Ohio State, but, you know, that's what we try to sell, but like the smaller classrooms. You know, like, we have, you know, the average classroom is one professor and 20 students, you know. I like to think you're going to get more personal attention. You know, I played at the University of Tennessee, and I was in a classroom with, anywhere from 100 to 200 people, you know, like, especially in your general ed courses. So it just depends what each individual student athlete is looking for.
Yeah. Now, how about as you travel around the country, Coach, you've been doing this a while, as far as minority participation goes, are we getting to see more of it?
Gosh, I wish I could say yes to that, you know, and, I don't know what the stat is. I think I saw something on the ITA that, you know, there's about 85% of our college players are white, you know, which means there's only about 15%, you know, that are black, Hispanics, or just minorities. I don't know if it's getting better or not, you know. I know the USTA is trying very hard, you know, to promote some grants and some scholarship programs and whatnot. But I think I'd like to see more effort maybe from the ITA, you know, like our governing body, you know, to try and do something that partners with the USTA. And they may already, so I don't want to speak out of context, you know, because they may already. But, I think there can always be more, for sure.
Yeah, definitely, Coach. You know, here on this program, we tend to notice is those are the populations that have a lot to give to this sport. You know, they're kind of an untapped market here. And think about it like this, and if you put rackets in the hands of certain athletes at the right age, I'll throw it out there to you, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Albert Pujols. Coach, if we put tennis rackets in their hands at 10, would they have been great American champions?
Yeah, I agree. They're definitely athletes, and there's a lot of great, great athletes, in every diversity, you know. So I think, you know, the question is, you know, how do we tap into that? You know, how do we do more of trying to get, you know, some of the minorities into tennis? You know, again, like, I think the USTA is trying. I don't know if the ITA is or whatnot, you know, at the college level, but, like, I think the USTA does have some programs and some grants. But, you know, it's just a lot of, I think a lot of people think tennis is a very expensive sport, and you have to join a country club, you know, to do this or that. You have to travel, you have to play tournaments. But, you know, like, I think you'll see, you know, in, like, every city, there's tennis courts everywhere. I mean, there's tennis courts everywhere. And I know sometimes it's cold weather, you don't want to go outside and play or whatnot, but even if you can get inside, like, a racquetball court or like, a backboard, tennis can be very, you know, I think it can be very economical. You know, you buy yourself a racket, buy yourself a pair of shoes. Tennis balls aren't very expensive. And you just got to, you know, we just got to find a way to do a better job trying to promote it.
Yeah, definitely, Coach. Now, let's just look at American tennis as a whole, and we're going to wind it up here. I've got one more after this, but, Coach, what do you think? Are we doing the right things? I mean, when you look at the American men on this side, and Isner's the best right now at 15, we're aging with Serena. you know, and yet the women all of a sudden just put out this great group of youngsters, and Stevens and McKees and Townsend. Are we getting closer, or is what's happening? What do you think?
I think we have to be encouraged. No, I mean, like, I think the Australian Open, should definitely make us feel encouraged. You know, I think, it's great to see what Isner's doing. You know, I haven't played college tennis at the University of Georgia. But, you know, even with the Sam Querys and, like before Andy Roddick retired and the Marty Fishes, I think there is hope. Yeah, I think there is hope. You know, I think, like on the women's side, just like you mentioned, too, with Sloan Stephens, I'll even put out Melanie, O'Dan as well in there. I think there definitely is hope. You know, I'd like to see, I don't know if it's a USTA or just like a lot of local tournaments, I'd like to try to see them give more wild cards to a lot of the struggling Americans, you know, not just the top Americans, but just like a lot of the struggling Americans that are in the 200s, maybe in the 250s, you know, try to give them a chance a little bit, you know, and see what they can do, because there's so many good tennis players out there all over the world, but like especially in America. I mean, there's so many good resources here and there's so many good tennis players here, but you know, like we get burned out quickly because we're not making the money, you know, and we're not able to play in these big tournaments or whatnot. So it can be discouraging, you know. So I think we can, you know, try to generate a little bit more support for, like, the struggling top talented pros, you know, not the ones that are in the 50s or the 100s, but those that are just trying to crack in there, you know.
Yeah, I agree, Coach. And Coach Creasy on Wednesday on American Tennis, he pursues that, you know, and that's the big step. I mean, how do you get, you know, like we're doing here with Isner and these others, we get to that point, but what does it take to get to that next point? And that's kind of where we've lost the perspective in all this, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, like I think when you're doing the tournament and you're a tournament director, you know, obviously what's going to sell tickets is to get the big names, you know. So I can understand that aspect from the tournament directors, but there has to be some kind of an incentive maybe just to try to get, you know, more support for the struggling pros that you're never going to hear of, you know, like unless we, you know, try to give them more support. So there has to be a better, you know, a better system. I don't know if we give out more wild cards. I don't know if, you know, if we, you know, try and reduce the admission of the tickets. I'm not sure, you know, but there's a lot of good tennis players out there that we're not getting a chance to see because, you know, they just don't get the help, I think, the support they need to try to get to that next level.
Well, Coach Montana, I've enjoyed having you on today, and I know you've got a busy afternoon planned on being there a parent, so I'm excited for you. you mentioned it earlier, if someone wants to check out your program, what's the website again?
That's calvulcans.com, so it's www.calvulcans.com, calvulcans.com.
Coach, and if somebody listens and has a recruit for you, is there an email address you're willing to give out?
Montana@calu.edu. I'm pretty easy to find, Lee. I'm pretty sure I'm the only Pablo Montana in the state of Pennsylvania, so I think I'm pretty easy to find.
Well, Coach, we really appreciate you coming on and telling us about your program and what you're doing up there. And now, when's your next match?
We play West Virginia University this Friday.
Outstanding. Well, that's the one thing I definitely miss is strapping on the boots and coaching two teams. It's fun to watch and be a part of, Coach. So good luck.
I love it. Lee, thank you very much.
Yeah, have a great day with what you're doing. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That is Coach Pablo Montana. He is the coach out at California University in Pennsylvania, and you know, it's an interesting story, and like I always did when I was there, Lee, I always wondered how in the world can a university in Pennsylvania be named California and be as good as they are. It's an outstanding Division II program. They're nationally ranked. They keep getting great players there and need your support if you can help them out. And feel free to contact Coach Montana and follow them out as they travel through the spring season and travel towards competing at the national level. And like you said, I mean, that is what tends to drive an athlete and gets them going is that desire to compete at a higher level. I really loved what he said about, you know, having to get ready to hit a faster ball and how true that is. The better you get, the faster that ball comes, and he does it real well. So thank you again, Coach Montana, and we look forward to having you back on the show again another time. And the rest of you, get out there and hit some tennis balls. Bye-bye.